Welcome to Jawa Jabber, a Star Wars podcast dedicated to spreading our own little slice of positivity throughout the galaxy. From the prequels to the sequels to every Disney Plus spinoff they want to throw at us, we're here to celebrate any time we get to spend in our favorite galaxy together, and we want you to come along for the ride. I'm David Wren, joined by my bro hosts Dennis, Kyle, and Matt. We invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy our fully armed and operational podcast.
And this is Jawa Jabber.
Hello there, Star Wars fans, and welcome to our previously delayed episode of Jawa Jabber. As always, I am your Supreme Leader, David Wren, and tonight I am joined by the one, the only, Kenobi.
Hello there, my name is Matt, and insert your Jar Jar Binks quote here.
Aw, thanks, Kyle. Yes, unfortunately, Matt and Dennis couldn't be on the show tonight, but hey, that's why there's four of us now, so when something like this happens, we can still have a back and forth, and it's not just me talking to my microphone and hoping that you guys are listening. Kyle, how you doing? You all recuperated from our journey across the pond?
I'd like to think so, yeah. The jet lag definitely hit me about a day or so after we got back, but man, was that a great
trip. Did it really?
You didn't feel it?
I was going to say, for the first time, I don't think I felt it. Like, I felt it a little bit when we got there. But coming home, I was I'm not sure why. Like, I mean, we're about a week now that we've been home, and I feel fine. Like, that first day back, I did sleep most of the day, so maybe that kind of, you know, helped or whatever. But, yeah.
I know. I'm the only person who went back to work. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that first day, yeah, me, Matt had off. Yeah, it was, you went right back to work. I don't know how you did that, dude. I don't think I would have been able to.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, no, you're right. That it was a great trip. It was fantastic. And we're going to talk about that on another episode. That is not what we're here for tonight. Because like we previously mentioned, we are fresh from Star Wars Celebration. There was so much going on. And, you know, it's really hard to keep up. And before we started with our Mando recaps, I want to give a shout out to all those other Star Wars podcasters and content creators, because as you know, and as our listeners know, like I kept saying about how we're going to do episodes in London and I wanted to do videos and updates and all that stuff. Well, then we got there and it kind of all changed. Like, you know, we had our first couple days of like sightseeing and stuff. And then we just walked into that over congested convention hall. And when you do that, you're transported into Star Wars. And it's not like the theme parks. That's a whole different level. But like there's cosplay and there's props and there's sets and there's merchandise and there's celebrities on the live stage and there's screaming and there's just so much. And it's so overwhelming. Even this was my third celebration and it was so overwhelming. I just got there and I just became a fan. And like, I couldn't break away to do like episodes or videos or like whatever. And I'm pretty sure that you and Matt felt the same way. Like we were just so engrossed in what was going on. And so, you know, I want to offer a quick apology to our listeners. You know, we were just soaking it all in, and it's going to make some really great content, you know, in the next month when we do our couple celebration wrap up episodes and whatever. But, you know, for right now, we're going to focus to what we've been doing, which is the episodes of The Mandalorian. We have two to cover today, as we highly anticipate our season finale, which is just a mere days away. Kyle, as you often do, how about you give us some behind the scenes info on the first episode that we saw, that we got to watch together in London at the not ungodly hour of 8 a.m. local time last Wednesday.
Absolutely. So this episode was directed by Bryce Dallas Howard, making her return. We all know she's directed episodes in seasons 1 and 2 of The Mandalorian, as well as Book of Boba Fett. And she will be directing, I think, Ahsoka as well, right?
I believe so, yeah. I'm pretty sure she's one of the Ahsoka directors, yeah.
I couldn't remember if she was in Skeleton Crew or not. I'll double check. So it was also written by Favreau and Filoni, and then Paul Heuwen was the director of photography.
Now, I know it's funny because this debuted, 2 days before Celebration. Obviously, you know, we watched it in the morning and then we went about our sightseeing and stuff. in London. So we didn't really get to talk about it too much, but
no.
I mean, we did get to watch it together. I believe we watched it again that night, or maybe Thursday night before the convention started on Friday. And I just remember, like, you know, checking all the Facebook groups and stuff, and it had a very Last Jedi fan reaction, in my opinion. Like, there were people that loved it, and then there were people that hated it, and there didn't really seem to be any people in the middle. Kyle, what did you think about it? Like, what were your thoughts about, like, just the episode in general? You know, obviously we'll talk about the cameos that were in it, because you can't not talk about them. But
absolutely. So just to double back on my other point, Bryce Dallas Howard is directing an episode of Skeleton Crew, not Ahsoka.
We had it reversed. Oh well.
Yep. I don't know. I was mixed on this episode. I think a lot of people were overhyped because it was a Bryce Dallas Howard episode, and everything right. she's done so far has been so great, especially her episode of Mando season 2 and Book of Boba Fett.
And Book of Boba Fett.
Return of the Mandalorian.
Right. That's one of my favorite episodes of Star Wars. You know,
I agree. But, that was a great,
like, it was a fantastic episode. And Boba Fett wasn't in it, but that's okay. That's another. That's how these shows work, you know? Like, the main character doesn't always have to be in the show.
I guess I was mixed on this episode. Not to jump ahead, but the cameos kind of took me out of it. And I hate to say that.
Right.
And it was more so Jack Black than Lizzo. I mean, I love Jack Black, mm-hmm. but he's very much an acquired taste for the audience.
That's true.
And I thought Lizzo was great. I mean, she's a huge Star Wars fan, and I didn't notice her performance. She was awesome. It was more Jack Black that kind of got to me.
I agree.
And then Christopher Lloyd just felt out of place a little bit as like a separatist sympathizer.
I was going to say Christopher Lloyd for me. Like, not that Jack Black didn't take me kind of out of it, because, again, he's one of those, he's so recognizable. And again, like you said, acquired taste. I am not particularly a fan of Jack Black. Sorry, Jack Black, if you're listening. I mean, you know, you do great stuff, but it's just not personally my cup of tea, as they say in London. But no, I thought Lizzo was great. And then when I remember we were walking in London and I saw that post, I guess it was Lizzo's tweet about, like, her dad, how her dad introduced her to Star Wars, and now she's in Star Wars, and it made her
yep.
feel like her dad would be so proud. And I remember just, like, shedding a tear. I was like, oh my God, I love this girl. And I did. I loved her back and forth with Grogu. Like, I thought that was really cute. I mean, you know, not crazy Star Wars action-y or whatever, but I loved it. Like, I thought it was great. And yeah, Christopher Lloyd just seemed out of place as a great word. And it's tricky with these cameos because, you know, obviously if a Christopher Lloyd or a Jack Black or someone like that comes to you and is like, hey, I want to be on your show, like, I feel like they're gonna try and make it happen, you know? Like, these are big name people, and a lot of time they call it stunt casting in the business, which I don't necessarily think Mandalorian is guilty of, because they definitely have a story going and whatever. But, like, you know, a lot of sitcoms and stuff, they always just cast people. They call it stunt casting, and it's to yep. garner ratings and, you know, whatever the case may be. And I don't necessarily think this was a case of that, but I feel like if they had spread out the cameos a little bit, you know, now, I mean, obviously Lizzo and Jack Black played a married couple, so they would probably still be together. But, like, just the fact that the three of them were in one episode,
it was, yeah, like, I agree. Like, I don't think they're stunt casting either.
It seemed
either,
like a lot. No, I don't think they're stunt casting. No.
I think it's just tough because I'm assuming both Jack Black and Lizzo approached Favreau and said, hey, we want to be on your show. What can we do?
Right.
And you thought, you know what I mean? Like, instead of spreading them out and having people only talk about cameos for a whole week instead of the story, they decided right. to just make them a couple and put them in the same episode. And I get what they're doing. It's just, you can't be afraid to say no sometimes. And I could be off base. Sarah
right.
Finn, who's a great casting director, she could have just wanted them to be in it. I don't know. It just didn't work for me, and that's fine.
Right.
But overall, I guess my opinions on the episode, it it was fine. It just felt like a 45-minute Clone Wars episode that was two episodes away from the finale, and it was massively out of place. This should have been like the second episode in the season.
Yeah, one of the things we did talk about in London before the convention started was that it did feel out of place in the grand scheme of the season. Now, obviously, the end of the episode with Bo-Katan fighting our new favorite Mandalorian actor that we got to hang out with at Celebration needed to be in this episode because of the way the story is progressing. But like the whole rest of it, like the battle droids and the this and that, like that definitely didn't have to be in this episode. And it did feel a little out of place. I believe Matt would use the word filler episode lovingly. You know, that's his favorite kind of description for it. And I would agree with it. But then on a second rewatch, it flowed a little better to me. But again, its place in the season for me personally is a little off.
Yeah, it felt like a misstep. And the more I think about it, I mean, episode 6 of season 1 had nothing to do with the main story. It was...
That's true.
It was the prison break episode.
It was the prison break, and the only thing
But it was a better episode, that's the thing. If you're going to do something that's out of place and a sidestep from the main story, it better be good. And this episode just, it didn't hit that for me. Again, it felt like a lot of episodes of The Clone Wars. It just wasn't the same. It's not a 22-episode season.
Right. And speaking of, like, out of place and whatever, what did you think of the fight between Bo-Katan and Axe Wolves? Like, something about it was a little off to me. Not the entire thing. I think, for me, and they did this in a previous episode, it's like the fighting with the jetpacks, if you know what I mean. Like, and I know they do wire work, and I know they, like, you know, so it might look a little weird or whatever, but, like, something about it was just a little off to me. I'm not...
Well, they keep reusing a lot of the same moves.
Is that what it is?
Maybe, frustrating. Maybe I don't know. I feel like
maybe that's what it is.
So that was my main gripe with the last John Wick movie, even though it was the most successful one out of the franchise, both with its reviews and the box office revenue. It's just the fight scenes feel stale. And that entire film with John Wick 4, I kept thinking this fight scene should have ended 5 minutes ago. I'm seeing the same moves, the same everything over and over and over. And here okay. I feel like with the jetpack stuff, I've seen this move of Bo-Katan where she's just kicking him from a side angle multiple times.
Right.
And you see the same kind of stuff, not to jump ahead, but in episode 7 with Axe Wolves and Paz Vizsla. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just, when you're used to watching the prequels, which is what we grew up with, and you these massive choreographed fights that feel like dance moves.
Yeah.
You watch the stuff we're getting in these TV shows, and it's just not, it's not up to par.
It's not the same. No, it's not the same. Right. I wonder, and this is a little off tangent, but like an Acolyte, you know, like, which was definitely some of my favorite footage that we saw other than Ahsoka at Celebration. Like, I wonder if that fight style will be any different. You know what I mean? Like, it's a different time period. It's a different, like, you know, it's closer to the prequel in time period than a lot of the stuff we've gotten. So maybe that'll be like some really cool choreographed whatever.
I think it's all about what you derive influence from. And you know, with Filoni, a lot of it's samurai films and Kurosawa. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it sounds like, why is her name escaping me? The Acolyte creator who did Russian Doll.
Yes.
I feel so bad I can't remember her name. But she was saying this show is like Kill Bill meets Frozen. And
which is the best description ever. Can I just say that?
Yeah. Leslie Headland. That's, I don't know why that was escaping me.
Sorry. I was trying to look it up and it didn't show up. All I see is Natasha Lyonne. I'm like, no, that's not the creator. Like,
but I'm the like, thing is, with Kill Bill, the fight scenes are very artistic and stylistic and unique. And then you're obviously mashing up with the style of the prequels being so close in the time period. And I don't know, I guess it's just because where the Mandalorians are regular people, quote unquote, that the fight scenes just feel kind of stale for me. But it's like the cold open of this whole series with Din Djarin in that bar and fighting Tate Fletcher and cutting the corn in half with the door. I mean, it just, it popped. I don't know. This season, to me, I love it, and it has a lot of great moments, but it just feels uneven.
It does. It does feel very uneven, and I don't know if that's because we had 2 years of anticipation. You know what I mean? Like, we kind of... Yeah. Like, you know, much like the sequels or anything that we've waited for a long time. I mean, we have all this fan expectation, which I know Matt and I have talked about before, how we try not to do that, like, so we can just enjoy it and not really worry about fan expectation. Mm-hmm. But, like, I feel like sometimes it just happens no matter what. Like, even if you're not trying to think about it, it happens. Like we were saying about how it was a Bryce Dallas Howard episode, and we're like, all right, this is going to be amazing. This is going to be the best episode ever. And, you know, like, it was good, but it wasn't the best episode ever. No. So.
No. And that's fine. I mean,
it is fine.
2, 5, and 7 this season were some of the best we've ever gotten. But again, absolutely. The rest, it just feels uneven.
It does kind of feel uneven, and I don't know how they would really fix that.
To be honest with you, man, in a perfect world, Rangers of the New Republic would have come out before this season.
Yeah.
And you can definitely tell a lot of those arcs were thrown into this season. I could be completely off base, but that's what my gut says, and it's usually
right. Do you think the Pershing and Aliyah Kane thing would have been Rangers of the New Republic?
Some of it maybe, but I think there was a lot more about the discovery of Gideon being sprung from jail that was in Rangers of the New Republic that we're not seeing here.
Right.
I think a lot of those storylines have been ushered into this season.
Right.
And it just makes me miss season one in a lot of ways, because it was such a personal and intimate story about Mandalorian and Grogu and this adoptive father and his child.
Right.
And I know that the scheme of things increases with the more they're on air, and now we're leading into a movie, which is a whole nother topic, but I feel like we're missing a lot of these intimate moments with the titular characters. We're just not getting in this season.
I agree with you on that. And again, like we've said before, it's not that it's unenjoyable, it's not that we're not enjoying what they're showing us, it's just, you know, it's a little different than kind of maybe what we were expecting. And, you know, not bad or terrible, and oh my god, Star Wars is dead, and you know, they ruined my childhood. And no, that's not what we're saying.
And if I say this with a lot of things, but if you love something, you'll never think it's perfect. You'll always want it to get better and to improve.
Well, yeah, remember
that goes for most things in my life.
Remember George Lucas, you know, movies are never finished, they're only abandoned, you know.
And yeah,
you know, he got flack for going back and doing the special editions and, you know, ruining people's childhood and stuff, but that's what he wanted to do. It was his movie. He always saw it a certain way. And as unnecessary as it is, he wanted that Jabba the Hutt scene in A New Hope. I mean, you know, whatever. If that's what he wanted, that's what he got.
See, you know? I grew up with the special edition, so I can't really say
anything. Well, see, so did I. That's the thing, dude. Like, I mean, okay, you really grew up with them. Like, you were like a fetus. But I was like 14 when they first came out or whatever, and I first saw them. But I mean, that was my first exposure to Star Wars. So yeah, no, to me, I was like, what are these people crying about? Like, I don't understand, you know? And that was like early internet too. Like, I mean,
yeah,
I didn't even have a computer until I was like a junior in college. So like, it was just early internet. The first time I ever kind of felt a certain way about something was the Blu-ray for Return of the Jedi. And in one of the most epic scenes ever, and Palpatine is killing Luke with the Force lightning, and Vader's looking back and forth. He looks at his master, he looks at his son, he looks at his master, he looks at his son. And it's that acting in a mask, which we've talked about before, which is a staple of Star Wars. And I love all these actors that are able to do it. And George Lucas added that no to that scene. And it drove me nuts. Not so much that I thought it ruined my childhood and whatever, but I still, to this day, and it's on Disney Plus, it's like, that is the new definitive version now, and I hate it. Like, I really do. So that was the first time I kind of understood what these people that grew up with the originals, like, maybe that's how they felt, you know, because at least to me personally, it almost cheapens that moment because it takes away the acting in the mask. Like, cause you don't know what he's going to do. Like, is he going to save his son? Is he going to do this? Like it's epic and it's crazy and the music is swelling and it's fantastic. And then he just goes, no. And he picks up the Emperor and, you know, throws him down the shaft and he's dead for a couple of years. And, you know, it's fine. Like it works, but it was unnecessary. That's where I'm going.
I'm ready to talk about episode 7 if you want to.
Yes, please. I'm sorry for the tangent. Yes.
No, not at all. Not at all.
We don't have anything else with that episode. Cause I mean, other than Sir Grogu, I guess, but that was Lizzo.
And I feel like that'll come back and that'll come back eventually.
I feel like it has to, you know. But yeah, so episode 7, we got a nice little surprise during Celebration the first day, Friday. We saw the Lucasfilm panel, which will be a whole nother episode in itself because of the saga that we went through to get into that. But that is another story for another time. Thank you, Maz Kanata. But Friday during the panel, they did selections of different things. Skeleton Crew, Ahsoka. Oh, Ahsoka. I can't wait to talk about Ahsoka. And Skeleton Crew and Acolyte and Indiana Jones. And they did a little section on Mando. And Jon Favreau was there and Dave Filoni was there. And they said that, you know, hey, I know you guys just watched an episode the other day, but how about you guys come back tonight and watch the episode on the big screen with everybody here? And, you know, we all cheered and everything and it was awesome. And we went and got the wristband and it was a similar feeling for Celebration 2022 when we got to do the Obi-Wan Kenobi premiere, except for, you know, that was the first episode and, you know, we hadn't seen any kind of content. And I know we didn't get to really talk about it beforehand, but like, what were you, Kyle, expecting that night? Like, were you expecting like as good of an episode as we got?
I mean, kind of, because that 8 minutes we got during the panel, like the cold open for the episode
was
just knocked
so
out of the park.
Good.
I mean,
it did.
The swagger that Alaya Kane has, thanks to Katie O'Brien's performance as she's like walking through the depths of Coruscant, like very level 13-13 style.
Yes.
Was awesome. And the setting and the fog coming through and the lights and the city life underground. It represented Coruscant perfectly. I loved it. And seeing Moff and the Shadow Council and Captain Pelion and Brendel Hux and everybody, it was just so good. And that kind of spoiled me. I was like, the rest of the episode has to match this.
And it did.
And Rick is obviously an incredible director.
Right.
So yeah, I guess I would say I was probably expecting the episode to be pretty solid. And we all knew Moff had to be in it because there's only 2 episodes left. And
he hadn't been in it at all. Yep. So, and then, you know, of course, much like Ahsoka, remember when we were debating the episode called The Jedi that Ahsoka was in, we were like, all right, how much of this episode is Ahsoka going to be in? Like, it's written by Dave Filoni. It's called The Jedi, you know, yada, yada. And then like the first freaking scene, Ahsoka shows up. We're like, oh, well, okay.
The answer is all of it. She's in all of it.
The answer is all of it. Yes, she is the episode. And she even got her own show out of it.
How much Ahsoka do you want? Yes.
Yes. Exactly. The answer is yes. But yeah, so Kyle, what about the behind the scenes for this episode?
All right. So this episode was directed by Rick Famuyiwa, written by Jon Favreau. Director of photography is David Klein.
But yeah, no. So like Kyle had mentioned, they showed us the first, 7 or 8 minutes of the episode in this Lucasfilm panel. And then he was like, you guys want to see more? You guys want to come back tonight and see it? So we got to see it, you know, 5 days earlier than everyone else, and it was awesome. And I'll tell you one thing, it was really hard, not that we didn't talk about it, but like it was really hard to not post stuff on Facebook. And it was interesting because, you know, everyone says stay off the internet for spoilers and yada yada yada, but like as soon as 3 a.m. hits for us, there's spoilers on there. You know what I mean? People are watching it. There's memes, there's quotes, there's all sorts of stuff. And there was none of that for the most part because, you know, John had given this impassioned speech about, you know, making sure we don't ruin it for everybody and whatever. And I like to think that a lot of people kept their word on that. I know not all of them did.
But, the thing is, it's much harder to take screen grabs when you don't know what's coming and you can't record the entire episode, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. And those scary security guards, dude. Oh, my God. Like, they were hunting people down everywhere. In that arena. They were hunting people down. But yeah, this episode, I mean, it was so good. Like, this is, like, when we say we want good episodes of Mando, this was a great episode.
And the thing is, we complain a lot about some of the previous episodes, but without those, the payoff wouldn't have been so amazing.
Very true. Episode. Yes, exactly. That is very true. And that's something that you have to remember. Like, and, you know, Matt uses the term filler episode all the time, but in a good TV show, there is no filler episodes because the storylines in these so-called filler episodes will come back and be important to the story in some point, you know, like that's a testament of good writing and whatever. And I know a major highlight for me, and I know, you know, where I'm going with this is IG-12 or Grogu Bot or whatever you want to call him. I mean, you were sitting right next to me. I'm sure you remember. I was like dying. I almost fell on the floor laughing. they put Grogu in IG-12, which is the former IG-11 that the Anzellian droid smiths decided, well, we can't reprogram him, so we're basically just going to make him a body, and then Grogu or an Anzellian or whoever can control him. And, you know, it's more like armor. And to me, I thought it was really clever. Like, I thought it was a cool way to maybe get Grogu in on the action other than, like, you know, force choking people or, like, you know, like throwing people until he wields the darksaber. That's going to be another topic of discussion at some point because we all know it's Grogu's destiny to wield the darksaber after Bo's done with it. So, yeah, no, but I loved and... You were talking earlier about, you know, certain scenes and how they're charming and whatever. And to me, that scene with Grogu and Din, where he's like, no. And Grogu's like, yes, 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 no, yes, no, yes, no. I mean, maybe slightly immature humor, but I loved it. I was falling on the floor. I was dying. I think Matt asked me twice if I was okay. I said, yes, I'm great. Like, it's just, I loved it.
No, it was perfect Star Wars comedy.
Right? Exactly. Like, and you know, it kind of reminded me a little bit of C-3PO in The Phantom Menace. Like, the way he moved, you know? Yeah. Like that puppet-like movement, but it works. It just kind of works. And now, you know, Grogu's got body armor and it's freaking off. I can't wait to see Grogu with these guns, like just shooting up people. Like, it's gonna be,
yeah, you know, this is gonna be like the instant purchase hot toy.
Yes, please. Yeah, I mentioned that in the group chat, didn't I?
I think so, yeah. I would totally buy that.
So would I. And like I said, I have an extra Grogu that came with my one Mando figure. Like, it came with two Grogus. So like, I don't even need the Grogu, but I don't think they're going to sell it without Grogu.
Yeah, so. No, I've got so many Grogus at this point.
Right. Who doesn't, you know?
By the way, I misspoke. Dave Filoni was the co-writer on this episode, not episode 6.
Okay.
So I was just thinking about like what we were expecting for this episode, because for the longest time, I was saying Sabine was going to be in this.
And yeah, I was wrong.
Remember that. That is the one prediction out of everything I predicted right about this episode or this season, not to sound conceited. This was the one thing I got totally wrong.
That's true. I forgot.
This is the first time Dave's co-written an episode without a major cameo, I believe.
Right. One of his characters coming to life. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
It was a very well-written episode, though.
It was so well written. It was so well done. It was like the effects were beautiful. What do you think of Moff Gideon hiding out on Mandalore this whole time? Like,
I feel like there's a lot more to it. I mean, I've seen a lot of interesting theories. The one I like the most is that he was like an abandoned foundling who never really accepted the way
or
got to do that. And now this is kind of like him taking his ball and going home after not getting picked up for the basketball team, you know?
Right, yeah.
That's the way it feels to me. And I like that theory a lot.
I like that theory too, yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I thought it was great. I like how he's kind of using Mandalore against them. It's very unique. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, Giancarlo Esposito is amazing.
Yeah, he really is.
He really pulls it off. I can't wait to see how his character interacts with Thrawn if he makes it that far. I really hope he doesn't die this season because I just want to see him like cower and whimper in a corner after Thrawn kicks his ass.
Do you really think they're going to kill him off? I don't.
Two villains going at it. I don't see that happening. Gideon has to die before,
right? Thrawn is the main villain for this movie. For those of you that are not playing catch up, they announced at Celebration, they announced three new movies, one taking place at the dawn of the Jedi. You know, thousands and thousands of years. It's going to involve the first Jedi ever to use the Force, find the Jedi way, whatever you want to call it. The second being a 15 years after the Rise of Skywalker and Daisy Ridley coming back as Rey Skywalker to build the new Jedi Order, a term taken from the Legends continuity, which I am very excited about. And then, of course, the main movie that we all got excited about was what we are referring to as the Mandoverse movie, helmed by Dave Filoni. Yay, our prayers have been answered. After all these years and all this hard work, he's finally getting a big budget feature film starring his characters. It's basically going to be Rebels the movie. No, but it's going to tie up storylines for The Mandalorian, Ahsoka, Skeleton Crew, Book of Boba Fett. Kyle, this movie, did they say it's going to be like the end? Like the movie, they said it was the culmination, but like, that's it, right? Like that's going to be like the final chapter of all these shows, or did they not?
No, they said the story is going to extend beyond that. So I think this is going to wrap up the main Thrawn storyline.
Right.
It'll be the halfway point of the entire Mandalorian story, whether it's with Din Djarin or not. And then after that, I would assume they're going to move more into the Palpatine setting up the sequels kind of thing. We'll see. I mean, the thing is, with how fluid the storyline is in Lucasfilm with their reactions to stories, and just to back that up, let's go with like the Game of Thrones creators, D.B. Weiss and David Benioff. They had a whole trilogy given to them. Season 8 of Game of Thrones bombed with the fans and they got it removed.
Right.
That's Ryan true. Johnson, his movies are shelved and now he's working on Knives Out. I mean, they are very reactive to the creators they work with, for better or for worse. I think if Love and Thunder was a better success with the fans, Taika's movie would be the first one up and not the Daisy Ridley-led movie with Charmaine Obey Chinoy directing, or even the second movie in line. But
I was going to say, they didn't say what order these movies are coming out, right? They just announced three of them.
Correct. And they said 2025, 2027, 2029.
That's what
now there's rumors that summer of 2026 might be another slot for
For December. Lucasfilm. December.
I don't know. Well,
December. Lucasfilm. Anthony Carboni, any of you, Ariel, if any of you are listening to this, please keep the December releases. They just personally, they add so much to my life because I love Christmas time. And combining it with Star Wars, and you know, maybe we can get a Jabba Jabba field trip so we can all go see the movie together. Like that would be the best.
As much as I agree with you, present. Dave, the even numbered years, the next few years will be taken up with Avatar, and Disney's not going to move Avatar. Disney's,
yes, they are.
It's a cash cow. It's makes so much more money than any other project they have going on. Actually, I take that back because there's no way they wouldn't have it scheduled out by then. So I take that back.
Yeah, but remember, part of the complaint with Solo was that it was too soon after The Last Jedi, because it was,
I mean, two extra months to make all the difference in the world.
That's true. That's very true. All right. That's true.
So I don't know. Just food for thought. I mean, I think if Indiana Jones does well, that's what I meant to say from the beginning, with this summer time slot being closer to 4th of July weekend. If that does well, I could see them putting Star Wars in there again, because the thing is, you know, Mando is going to be a smashing hit. It just needs the proper marketing to the audience who probably watched the first season or two and hasn't caught up with it since.
Right.
But Solo was a gamble from the start with casting anyone other than Harrison. I mean, their hands are tied, obviously.
True.
But and I love Alden in that role.
Right. So do I.
But that was just a movie that not a lot of people asked for. The Mandoverse movie is something that everybody's been asking for.
That's true. I mean, from the time it premiered, everyone was like, why wasn't this a movie? Why wasn't this
exactly.
Rise of Skywalker?
I know that was all over the place, and I apologize for that.
No,
but
it's what we do.
I think the Mandoverse movie could be a huge hit in 2026 following the 2025 Star Wars movie. But back to my original point, making this full circle, Lucasfilm was very reactive. So say the season 4 of Mando bombs, the movie bombs, and that could be the end of Mando. It might not be the halfway point, like Favreau said.
Right.
Lucasfilm was very reactive to these things. But I think for a long time, these three movies they've been planning and shifting directors around with have been the plot all along. So the movie with Rey originally was going to be written by Damon Lindelof.
Mm.
And he left the project. Stephen Knight stepped on, who is the writer for Peaky Blinders. But they've kept the same director. They've kept Sharmina as director the whole time. I think this Ben-Hur style movie about the Dawn of the Jedi has also been in the works for a long time. They just need to find the right director.
Right. And wasn't that originally Taika's? Taika's
movie?
Yeah,
so I think they're shifting him to something else, or maybe he'll direct another project in that time frame. Because they were both inspired by Ben-Hur, and there's no way there's two movies being made with similar influences. There's no chance.
Right.
And now James Mangold's directing that movie, and he's the absolute right fit. I mean, we saw 6 minutes of Indiana Jones. It was incredible. Logan was incredible. Ford vs. Ferrari is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
He's the right man for the job. So we'll see what happens with the future. But
and now back to our Mando episode. See, I love this because it proves that we don't need all four of us on here to go off on tangents, and that makes me happy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was so off topic.
No. But we're not off topic because it's related to what we're talking about. So, you know, it does still fall under the umbrella of Star Wars. So, you know, this is a Star Wars podcast. We go off on tangents. It's what we do. It's fine. It's fantastic. At least I'm not talking about General Hospital. So, you know, it's great. So we're still ahead of the game. But no, to cycle back to this episode, we got to talk about Heavy.
Yeah, I did not expect to feel that strongly about his
death. Me neither, because it's no secret that he's not my favorite character, like, ever. Like, in season one, like, he was okay when he kind of flew to the rescue or whatever, but, like, since Book of Boba Fett, when he was all like, my ancestors had the Darksaber, I want the Darksaber, I challenge you to a duel, blah, 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 I'm like, who the heck is this guy? Like, you know, like, whatever. And then he shows up in season three, and he's got little Kimmel with him, and it's his son, and I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever, they're softening him a little bit, okay, whatever. But, like, for him to go out in a blaze of glory, like, saving everybody, and then the guards show up. Oh, my God, dude. I couldn't handle it. Like, I lost it. Like, it was great. And it was so... It's funny, because, like, Star Wars doesn't do this all the time, but, like, it was Star Wars violent. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like Mortal Kombat without the blood. You know, like, cause there still was no blood there, but it was vicious. Like, you know, episode 3 is very vicious and very dark because, you know, they're killing all the kids, but, like, you don't actually see it. You know what I mean? Like, you see, mm-hmm. like, you see dead kid bodies and whatever, like, you know, when
Obi-Wan, this dude got stabbed 6 times.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, you know, but a lot of it's implied, you know, like, even in the original Empire Strikes Back, when Luke chops off the Wampa arm. Like, you know, you don't really see it, you know, like you don't see blood. You don't see this, you don't, you know, like we joke that the lightsaber just, you know, cauterizes the wound. And then that's why it doesn't bleed, you know, but like, like this was like, I mean, yeah, he got stabbed and stabbed.
One of my favorite shots, as brutal as it was when he was already on his knees, pretty much.
Yeah.
And the Praetorian guard stabs him like through the trap area by his neck and then forces it in. I'm like, oh my God, that is unnecessarily brutal.
And it was in slow motion, kind of, you know, like it was.
Yeah,
just
so... it was. Their entrance was badass, but I gotta say,
the
lighting did not do them justice. Like it didn't. Again, this is movie budget versus TV budget, and it's Ryan Johnson, a film director with a ton of experience in that realm. Not to say anything against Rick, but I feel like he has more experience with bigger budget films, obviously.
Right,
but like, the way the Praetorian guards were shot and their scenes compared to this are very starkly different. And I'm sure they didn't want them to be similar.
Right.
But I feel like they just, the design of these Praetorian guards is way better than they were in Last Jedi, in my opinion. I love the Mandalorian influence and the way they moved and everything. And as much as I have problems with the choreography in that scene in Last Jedi, they just, they looked better than they did here in the Mandalorian.
I can't believe you have problems with that scene in The Last Jedi.
That's not even the thing. Again, I don't hate the sequels. It's just...
No. I know. Again, I know you don't, but I just... like, that's one of my favorite scenes ever. Like, I just...
When you go from the prequels where there are literally no errors in Nick Gillard's stunts,
all right,
and then you see, like, a Praetorian guard run up... This is, you don't have to watch it in slow-mo to notice it. You see a Praetorian guard run up to Kylo and then turn away in a spin move because... Adam Driver's not ready. Like that's just poor stunt. That's just work, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Yeah.
And I know I probably changed your whole opinion on it. I'm just kidding.
But you made me look at it differently and I'm going to have to watch it tonight. But
yeah, Ryan Johnson did the Praetorian guards more justice, I think. And I hope we see more of them. I mean, I want to see Din in some action in the finale and I'm sure we'll get into our predictions for that, but man, it was still so cool seeing them, regardless.
Oh, it was. And what about, you were saying the differences, like, do you think it made a difference, not just budget, but, like, the volume versus a film set? You know, like, maybe that had something to do with the lighting, too?
I mean, or potentially, I mean, but the volume is just a replacement for blue screen.
That's true.
And it really just depends on your director of photography and your lighting crew and all that kind of stuff and what they're directed to do, because a lot of the same Lucasfilm people work on the movies and the TV shows, so it's not that it's what they're directed to do, whether it's the director, the director of photography, the second unit, whatever. But I don't know, again, it still looked great. It's just I've seen better scenes in this season, and the Praetorian guards deserve a little more justice, I feel like.
Yeah, because they're so...
They're now, like, you fear them. I have not had fear in my eyes for a character like that since the Dark Troopers in season 2.
Now, who do you think is in charge of those guards? Because, like, you know how Gideon asked for them at the council, like, in the beginning of the episode? Like, do you think they're Thrawns? Do you think they're Paleons? Like, who do you... I mean, Paleon would be with Thrawn. But, like, because Thrawn's still missing in action at this point, right? Because they reference him, like, you know, Thrawn's supposed to come back, and he's not back yet, and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, he's still in the whale with Ezra or whatever. So, like...
Yeah, I mean, I assume they're just loyal to the Empire, the Shadow Council, but I don't know if, like, if ordered to turn on Hux and Paleon, if they would do that by Gideon. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm assuming that they're still in charge of the whole gig.
Yeah, probably. I would assume so. And I like that they've built up kind of the opposite of the New Republic. Like, you know, there's these factions of Imperial remnants and they're all working together, even though the New Republic thinks that it's spread out, you know, and like they're not really that organized, but they actually are. You know, they're reemerging the Empire, they're forging the First Order. Like,
yeah, they're just hiding.
Right. They're just hiding. And it's very strategic and it's very. Now, one question that I wanted to ask you guys, and I know it's just you tonight, Kyle, but like, do you think that this kind of downplays the Battle of Endor at all? Like, cause like the Empire didn't really go away. Like the Empire's been there lurking in the shadows this whole time. Like, does it downplay the original trilogy? Like in my head, it kind of doesn't, but like, it kind of does. Like it's kind of a touch and go for me. Like what are your thoughts on this? Like,
think so. I think it's more because the thing about we're not seeing an entire political system like the New Republic going up against the Empire. They're not aware of the whole threat yet. We're right. just seeing a group of Mandalorians, one race of people who all derive from one planet, whether they're scattered or not, going up against this force. And that's why it isn't undue Return of the Jedi to me, but knowing Palpatine's coming back and everything that is included and encompasses that definitely undoes Return of the Jedi to me, and we've all talked about that before. I mean, in a perfect world, Star Wars to me would have ended with Return of the Jedi. But as much as, again, I appreciate the sequels and what they've done for Star Wars, and the filmmaking was top notch, but to me, the story was my issue. And that's kind of what undoes Return of the Jedi. And you and I talked about Anakin's legacy and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But for this story and its purposes, a huge political system like the New Republic being unaware of these remnants, and again, just a group in a race of one people from one planet trying to demolish them single-handedly, is why it stands on its own and doesn't really touch on Return of the Jedi, in my opinion.
So do you think the, for lack of a better word, episode 10, which I will always call it on this podcast, even if it has an official title down the line and whatever, like, do you think that might kind of fix some of the story issues of the sequel trilogy and maybe in retrospect make everything make a little more sense? Or
I think that's what the Mandalorian's going to do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely really filling in gaps, like with the cloning and with, you know, like,
yeah,
it's definitely setting up Palpatine's return
100%
more so than the sequels did.
I would say my biggest hope with episode 10 or whatever they're going to call it, my biggest hope is they introduce a new villain. And in the grand scheme of things, if the trilogy was planned out from the start the way we hoped it was going to be, and that's not a slight against it. Again, like George's, the original story was not planned out. I don't care what you say. It just happened to work out the way you wanted it to.
Right.
And that's my biggest gripe with the sequel haters is they're like, oh, well, there's no plan. There's no story. Like, tough love. George didn't do it either. The only issue is that he was creating it from scratch from the start. And the issues the sequel trilogy had was that it was already building off of 6 movies and a couple animated shows.
Right.
So you cannot blame the sequels for that.
No.
But in retrospect, they should have gone with a new villain. They had so much to play off of. They could have done Thrawn. They could have done the Yuuzhan Vong. They could have done a number of things from Legends. But Lucasfilm chose to ignore Legends for a long time, and now they're regretting it. That's just the cold-hearted truth.
If they had stuck with Snoke, I think it would have been fine. You know, like, I mean...
Yeah, even, again, Snoke was great. Like, that's...
Right.
He was a great original new character.
Right.
And
he had, like, he had shades of the Emperor, but... You know, like, he even kind of talked like him in The Last Jedi a little bit, you know, like young
and fool, that's kind of like stuff.
And it was fine. Like, it was, yeah, like,
that's just the teetering and tottering, the back and forth with undoing things, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Snoke wasn't Rian Johnson's character. Rian Johnson killed him off.
Correct.
Rey was JJ's character. Rian chose to say that she's a nobody. And then JJ went back and made her a Palpatine. Like, it's the constant when you're shifting hands and you're passing the baton from one person to the other, decisions that are integral to the story are being undone.
Right.
And that's just what I don't appreciate. Like, Snoke was a great character. He should not have been killed in the middle part of the movie.
No,
and I get what they were doing.
As shocking and as subverting the expectations as it was, I agree with you. Yeah. And then because I think it kind of messed with Kylo's story a little bit too. Because
yeah, and I get it. Like, it would have been cool to have a really personal story with Kylo and Rey, but having Snoke being in place of Palpatine would have made a lot more sense for me and would have been better for the characters, in my opinion. And they also Andor proved that they wasted Andy Serkis. I mean, he was great as Snoke, but so much more could have been done. I mean, this guy is I'm laying the gauntlet down right now. He is the most talented person working in the film industry today.
He really is. The guy is like
the godfather of motion capture.
Right.
He's an incredible director and an actor, and he knows what he's doing on all fronts. He's just a generational talent, in my opinion.
I'm really excited they found another character for him to be, you know?
I agree. Like, and I'm glad he's going to be in season two of Andor as well.
Yes, definitely. Because that means he learned how to swim, and it's fantastic.
Again, tangents like we always do, and there's only two of us. Where were we? We were talking about Praetorian Guards, I think.
We were, yes.
I don't know how this happens. Like, it just... I don't know. Because, I don't know why we do this.
Well, no, because we're so passionate about it. That's why, you know, like it's a big part of our lives. I mean, we just got back from a trip halfway around the world to celebrate Star Wars. You know what I mean? Like it's such a big part of our lives. I think that's why, and that's the magic of this show. I think, like, meaning Jawa Jabber, like it brings the four of us together, and we can just kind of chat about it outside of a group text, outside of celebration, outside of all this other stuff, and we can share it with other people. And I don't know, I love it. I'm still on my celebration high. I love it. I love you guys. It's a great part of my life, and I'm just very happy that it's in our lives. Yeah.
Agreed. So yeah, I don't think this undoes Return of the Jedi in any way.
That's what we were talking about.
Story, yes. And it's going to bridge the gap between the two trilogies, which I'm grateful for. So I'm excited to see where the story goes after the Mandoverse movie, assuming we get more stories in this universe. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I'm really excited for it either way.
And speaking of we'll see, I don't know. What are you thinking about this week, buddy? Like, I almost don't want to make predictions, but like, I feel like we have to. I mean, our whole season so far has been building to two things, Celebration and Mandalorian, and Mandalorian's about to wrap up. So like, what do you, I don't know, like where do we go from here? I mean, Heavy is dead. You know, is Little Kimmel gonna exact his revenge on Moff Gideon? Like, I don't know. What are you thinking? And then I'll bounce off of you, because my thoughts are so scattered, and I'm really not sure. I don't know what to expect, really. Like, I mean, I feel like we'll see the Mythosaur again. You know, maybe like the Mythosaur will destroy the Imperial base or something. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's funny because last week we were getting into predictions, and then Matt was like, "Okay, stop. I feel like I'm spoiling the episode for myself."
Right. I mean, that's true. Yeah.
So I guess my number one, Bo-Katan's going to get the Mythosaur. I feel like that's coming. They've been building towards it. She will be the Mandalore. The Spies, the title of episode 7, I don't think it means what we all think it means. I don't think there actually is a spy. Whether the armor is working for Gideon or not is irrelevant. I sent you guys this story, but there's a story called The 12 Spies. I'm going to read it right from Wikipedia.
Okay.
The 12 spies, as recorded in the Book of Numbers, were a group of Israelite chieftains, one from each of the 12 tribes, who were dispatched by Moses to scout the land of Canaan. I don't know, my bad. For 40 days as a future home for the Israelite people. The Mandalorians are the spies in this case. They're okay. Going out, they're scouting a new land for their home, Mandalore. That's who the spies are. I mean, it's right there.
Okay.
If we watch this episode and Max Woves is a spy, then I'll eat crow. But the story has a lot of religious hints and elements from multiple religions, and I feel like this is just another pathway for that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and Star Wars in general has always had those religious kind of subtexts. And, you know, I mean, our favorite character, Anakin Skywalker, is the chosen one. Yeah, I don't know if the armor is going to be evil or not. Like, I like to think not, because she's been such an important character in this show. But, I mean, I guess she could be working against them. It is convenient that she wasn't on the planet during that siege, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I just want a really good episode. It's still, and I'm going to say it again, it's too short. What did they say the runtime is? Like 37 minutes or something like that?
Yeah, the rumor is 38 minutes, but I don't know. That guy took down his comments, so maybe something's changed. Maybe they haven't seen the impacts, though. Because the last two seasons of the Mandiverse story have had end credit scenes. I don't know. I mean, the cryptic 4Cal, whatever his username is on Twitter, hasn't released the runtime yet. He said that people are going to freak out when they hear it or see it, but he hasn't released it. So I'm not sure what's going on. I'm assuming it's a shorter episode. But as long as it's a good story, man, I don't care. Season 2 finale
felt
a little long and and off pace, as great as it was and as great as the Luke Skywalker reveal was. But that was only, I think, 44 minutes.
Right.
Subtracting credits.
Yeah, so, no. And you don't need, I mean, you don't have to have a super extra long episode for it to be a good episode. Like you said, as long as the writing is good, the action's good, the acting is good, like all that stuff, it totally, you know, it'll be fine. I just, me personally and selfishly, I want long episodes. That's all. I've said it from the beginning and I'll say it until the Star Wars TV universe is done. Like, you know, I just like longer content because then I have more background noise while I go about my day, you know?
Yeah, I feel like my biggest prediction is kind of getting flamed right now on social media. For whatever reason, is Din Djarin gets mind flayed, and not to the point where he's a vegetable, but to the point where he just loses his recent memories of Grogu, because that has stakes. We need stakes in this story. Something bad has to happen to the main character. I mean, it's part of the hero's journey, and I've never felt like Din is actually in danger. I feel like Grogu's in danger all the time,
right?
But I haven't felt like Din is actually in danger.
I don't want him to lose his memory, though.
I mean, Grogu can help him get it back, and that'll be the whole purpose of season 4, and it'll give the character something to work towards.
But okay, how do you get your memory back?
I mean, Ahsoka helped Grogu remember, didn't she? And same thing with Luke.
All right, that's true. All right, fine.
The Force works in mysterious ways, my friend.
Yes, it does.
Like, this is why I had to stay off social media sometimes, is I love Pedro Pascal more than most people, I would say. Like, he is daddy. But his stands on Twitter are almost worse than Taylor Swift stands.
Yeah.
I mean, Dennis and I on the Jabba Jabber account post something about the mind flayer theory. And someone's like, that's the worst prediction I've ever heard in my entire life. And I looked at their replies and they were just going through and saying the same thing to everybody who said Din was going to die or get mind flayed.
Well, I really don't think he's going to die.
No, there's no chance. But, like, pain helps you connect with the character, man.
No, I know.
He had pain from losing Grogu to a certain extent for a little bit of time. But, I mean, if everything is just sunshine and rainbows, you're going to start losing your sympathy with the character eventually because you're not going to connect with them.
No, that's true. I know. And I don't want it to be sunshine and roses because then there's no show. But, like, you know, I don't know. He has Beskar armor. He shouldn't be harmed. Oh, are they going to take his helmet off to mind flay him?
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. I mean, they have to show his face once per season, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I hope this is not the exception, but...
But that means he won't
be going to take his helmet off to, like, emasculate him in a sense.
So then he's going to have to go to the Mines of Mandalore again and do the whole thing.
Gets mind flayed, then he's not going to remember.
Oh my god, and then he won't have his helmet on for season 4.
I'm sure he still will because Pedro's a hot commodity.
Oh, yeah.
But selfishly, I mean, god, I don't want to say anything about Last of Us because I love that show. And I know people who listen that haven't played the second game, so I don't want to say anything further.
I gotcha.
But I think he might have some time to film more scenes without the helmet in season four.
Yeah, it's like anything. It's going to be a ride, and I'm really excited to see where it goes. Is it 4 a.m. on Wednesday yet? Like, I just want to watch it. You know, like,
I know, I can't wait, man.
I know, I can't either. I just,
and the thing is, there's no leaks either, which is like killing me, which is
right. Yeah,
it's good for me because I can't help myself.
Well, now I know you can't now, but wasn't there no leaks about Luke Skywalker also? Like, haven't they gotten really good at keeping, like, because I remember season two, like, we knew Ahsoka, we knew Bo-Katan, we knew all this other stuff, but like, I don't remember ever hearing anything about Luke Skywalker.
So, no, there was nothing about Luke. And I mean, there's some stuff about the finale, but nothing with like relating to Din or anything else that really impacts the story that you wouldn't already see coming.
Did you see that Brendan Wayne said that it's going to hurt? Like, it's going to, quote, hurt a lot?
Yeah, but then Dave and Favreau said they'll be cheering by the end of the episode. So,
well, I don't know. But it still could hurt. I mean, look at Heavy. Look how much Heavy, you know, hurt us. Like, and again, I was not expecting that. That was good. But again, sometimes subverting your expectations are good. You know?
Yep.
Like, it doesn't always have to be a bad thing or a negative thing. But yeah, I mean, so that's gonna wrap up our episode tonight. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm gonna do my best Dennis impression as I tell you guys to follow us on our social media pages. We've got Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Kyle, we need to link your Twitter to our account because you're the most active on Twitter. And then I'd say Matt and I are the most active on Facebook. And then Dennis can round up the Instagram, or, you know, I'm just speaking for him at this point. But that's what we do when everybody can't be on the show. So thank you all for listening. The season finale of Mandalorian premieres this Wednesday at 3 a.m. Eastern Time. Again, 8 a.m. in London, which was so nice to be able to just kind of wake up casually and watch it with your best friends. It was phenomenal. So, Kyle, do you have anything else to add?
This is the way.
This is the way. All right. For Kynobi, Matt the Radar Technician, Dennis the Phantom Menace, and myself, I am your Supreme Leader, David Rinn. Thank you very much for listening, and may the Force be with you. Always.